Welcome to The Swerve, where politics and public interest meet. One of my favourite bits of Robert Redford's film, The Candidate, is that final scene where he's alone in the bathroom. It's just really sinking in that he's won his election campaign and he says, "What the hunt do I do now?" Well, my current best bet for our state election is that we're going to have a much longer moment like that after the polls close in March, and probably for quite a while after that as well. But on all sides, the question will still be, what happens now? The great irony is that we've just gone through all sorts of electoral gymnastics to make sure that the party with a two-party preferred majority of votes will get the right to form our government. Changing boundaries, abolishing seats, creating new ones, a nip here and a tuck there. Only to realise, when it comes to the point, that there isn't a party we would really prefer to take the reins at all. Major party has been redefined to mean not getting 40-something percent of our vote, but at best 30 or even 20-something percent. Maybe we should be talking about them as UKA, otherwise known as major parties, or FKAs, formerly known as major parties. And with split ticketing of preferences, perhaps we'll be playing some sort of 52-card pickup to get a decision. How democratic. How terrifying. Whatever lot do eventually front up at Government House to get their commissions, we're very likely going to be wondering how it might work this time around. It's quite within the bounds of possibilities that our Governor Hugh Van Lee might feel the need to get some independent advice before handing out those parchments. But think about it from the other side. The bright, shiny new ministers charged with the government and governance of our state for the next 4 years. Labor's been in power for so long, it's 16 years without a break, that there's near enough to know an outside of Labor with ministerial experience. Not that you could say without qualification that all that experience would be worth passing on. All the same, it's difficult for the ego, if nothing else, to be swept into power, charged with ministerial responsibilities by the governor, make an impressive entry into your ministerial suite and then have to ask your assembled senior public servants the Robert Redford question. What the hunt do I do now? After all, like it or not, government's the biggest business in town, and chunks of it, particularly health and education, employ more than anyone else. And that means presiding over hundreds of millions of dollars a year. A bit bigger than an electorate office. It takes a while to learn the ropes and then a while longer to start to be really effective in getting the best results out of your ministerial empire. If done well, it's a tough gig. If you're not fully up to it, it can take a lot of support to get you through with some semblance of authority, even at the highest levels. When it comes to experience, of course, Premier Jay Weatherall has a distinct practical advantage. He's tough as old goat's knees. He's focused and intense. He's been tempered in the fire of factional rivalry and long observed the increasingly aggressive premiership of Mike Rann. Stephen Marshall comes with extended management experience in small to medium business, but has had to swim through the cloying rivalries within his party. Both parties have it, of course. It's a sort of political version of mud wrestling. Builds character, no doubt. But whatever his own qualities, Stephen Marshall comes after a long tail of underperforming Liberal opposition leaders. Some of his senior spokespeople speak and present quite well, but that doesn't necessarily convert into effective ministerial performance, and certainly not from day one. The Weatherall ministerial lineup has had quite a shuffle in recent times to cope with embarrassments, blunders and more. Plausibility and debating skill don't necessarily translate into solid ministerial performance, which of course cops me out begging the very question, what is ministerial performance? Well, it depends. An example, Paul Keating was a formidable performer, debater, persuader, not to mention head kicker, fierce fighter within his own party as well as with oppositions, any oppositions, with a capital O or without. He gave us the recession we had to have and abandoned many Labour Party economic shibboleths. Now, that's a word we don't hear too often these days. But to me, the most telling comment about him as a minister heading Treasury came in that TV documentary called Labour in Power, astutely made when Keating was expected to lose the election, which gave him the sweetest victory of all, as he called it. David Murray, a senior Treasury officer, now still at one of the pinnacles of our financial system, summed it up by saying, "Under Keating, Treasury got up more of its agendas than under any other Treasurer, i.e., he enabled Treasury, the public service, to take over his party's and the nation's economic and financial policy to quite excellent effect, we might say. Whereas other ministers have impressed by imposing their programs and policies on a sometimes reluctant public service. As in other respects, our state election's been shaping up as a very unbalanced, uneven, unpredictable affair, and that'll go for the aftermath as well. One comparatively new element is the greatly expanded number of ministerial staffers and advisers these days, people employed outside the public service to provide advice, support, and nose-wiping services to the politicians from a political point of view. I'm not close enough to the scene to be able to venture an opinion on whether they'll all be behaving themselves in this pre-election period. After all, we don't pay them to electioneer for their employers. But the line between that and serving the minister can be both fine and blurred. I'm more interested, more concerned, about their role after the election, the Labour ones staying on or others coming in to replace them. The ones who lose can lick their wounds and count their payouts. The winners will be highly motivated to hit the deck running and get early scores on the board, and other clichés and mixed metaphors. But beyond a certain point, they might be better advised to take a Bex and have a good lie down, because any new government will be best served by concentrating particularly on a very practical, very focused transition to government strategy, or if it's Labour again, a house-cleaning strategy as well, to get key people in the right places and concentrated not on victory laps, but how to get their overall program implemented over a manageable period, not in a sudden victorious rush. This will involve an element of discrete bloodletting and a lot of groundwork, a distinct shift from electioneering, sloganising and scoring quick points in the media. That's keeping it simple. But there is more than a passing chance that we could end up with a new coalition or a minority government with pledges of support from who knows where, after how many pizza lunches in what unlikely places. And that may be no bad thing. After all, even Don Dunstan observed that it's not necessarily a bad thing to have to persuade a political opponent to assume the Speaker's wig, though hopefully not the leggings and breeches as well, of course, when you haven't quite got the numbers. It's remarkably useful for keeping your backbench in line, he observed.